Hey everybody, this is Shop Talk Show number 262. We're going to be doing a deep dive into CSS Grid. Not just grids in general, the new layout specification as part of CSS that somehow miraculously dropped in a ton of major browsers in March of 2017. It's now early May 2017, and so this is starting to be on a lot of people's minds, like, wow, I can really use this stuff, or can you yet? So we're going to dig into that story. Is it usable in production? How does it, what's the difference between it and Flexbox? Can you use them together? Does it make sense to use them together? You know, a lot of, you know, we get lots of questions that are like, why would I use this when I have Bootstrap? So of course, we're going to get into all that. The story of, is it, it's not just grid, right? It's grid in like, as Jen will tell us, 18 other properties that all kind of arrived at once with us that is specific to grid. So do you need all that or what? Are there any cross-browser problems? What's there? What's not there with grid? What's the mobile story? What can you do with it? And probably the most important thing is like the muscle memory, the part about grid that's the, maybe the hardest of all is wrapping your mind around and starting to reach for it when you need to, like understanding it, getting past the confusion part, the mental struggle of CSS Grid. So we're going to get into all that with two of the most foremost experts in the world on CSS Grid. But for now, Dave, please kick things off.
Hello, welcome to Swiss Design Podcast. I'm Dieter Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
I knew you'd throw me off.
Gotcha. Hey, classic Shop Talk gotcha moment. Chris, what's going on today? Who do we got in the studio?
Well, we have two wonderful guests who are the world's foremost experts on a technology that's very important to web design these days, which is CSS Grid. And you're already looking, you're in your podcaster of choice. You already know who they are. Let's do it on the air. We have Rachel Andrews. Hey, Rachel.
Hello.
Who we've had on before to talk about lots of stuff. Anyway, and we'll get to all that in just a minute. And Jen Simmons. Hey, Jen.
Hello.
Long friends of the show, I'd say. We've also had Jen on before, but this is important. Super tag team. In fact, all three of us are at a ton of event aparts this year and are often run into each other at conferences because we just are part of that world, I guess. Yeah. But it's, you know, I see Jen and Rachel can often tag teamed at conferences because of the, largely because of CSS Grid. So maybe I'll start with Rachel. What are you talking about these days? How has this CSS Grid thing played out in the last year or so?
So mostly what I tend to talk about is, I guess, the technical aspect more of grid and using grid. So most of the things that people want to know now it's sort of shipped in browsers and I'm not just kind of going around saying, hey, look at this cool thing. You know, people kind of know what it is, or you know, they've sort of seen something of it. And
it's gotten weird, hasn't it? Like, because it's, I mean, I guess you said, but I feel like you've been talking about this for years and it must feel weird and new and different now that everybody cares.
Yeah, so it was like 2012 I started working with the spec. So I've been doing this for a very long time. I was just writing a talk for a conference later this week where I'm going to talk a bit about the history of grid. And yeah, so I've been doing this for ages. And then all of a sudden it's now in browsers and everyone wants to know about it. And a lot of the stuff people are asking me are really about how do we deal with older browsers? How do we start to use this stuff without kind of having no layout and other things. So I'm doing quite a lot of that sort of stuff at conferences, you know, showing how the spec defines what happens with overrides, for instance. So that's where it's kind of gone a lot for me, because that ties into what I do at work, really, you know, with the sort of things I'm building.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll get into that stuff shortly. We even joked around a little bit before the show and that, you know, what questions lie in wait for you about grid. There are new questions about grid. Jen, what is your message lately?
Hi. Yeah, it's super exciting. It's grid came out of nowhere and all of a sudden shipped in four browsers in March, or five, I guess, depending on how you count. Although it didn't come out of nowhere for Rachel or for me or for those of us who are paying attention. But I think
patiently waiting for it.
Yeah, who saw it coming. But I think for a lot of people, it's here. It's finally here. So what am I doing this year? I mean, I've been teaching people for the last three and a half years. I've been doing a lot of conference talks about layout and about design of pages and layout design. So I was just actually watching a video that's going to come out in about a month of my Event Apart talk last year. Yesterday I was watching it and I was like, oh, right. I was talking about all that other stuff that's not grid. Right. That stuff's cool too. But now the grid is out. It's just, it's, you know, it's wall to wall grid. What is it? How do you use it? How do you write the code for it? What can you do? What does it mean for design? How does it actually completely change what responsive design is? Wow. How does it change what the flexibility model is for the web? We had fixed and we had fluid, and now we've got this completely other thing that's not, well, I guess we went fixed, fluid, responsive, this particular idea of what responsive is. And now we have like a whole completely new other model of how flexibility can work. And I'm just on my own too. I'm spending a lot of time exploring how grid works and asking with a lot of curiosity and kind of this dance with the medium itself to figure out what is it that the web has suddenly become and what does it mean for the kinds of sites we want to create? Because I think something has shifted, and the last thing I want to do is have the whole industry just make more 12 column symmetrical layouts and think, oh, it's easier to write the code. Okay, that's cool. Moving on. You know, like,
sure.
That's not it. So. Which,
yeah, there's certainly that danger is there. So before we, what does it mean? Both of you said grid is here. Let's do that part real quick. Rachel, what does grid is here mean? Evaluate to at this
point. So grid shipped into live production browsers pretty much across the board in March, which has never really happened before. You know, we're kind of used to CSS creeping out. You know, you get something in Firefox, but it's not in anything else. You get another thing in Chrome, but it's not in anything else. With Grid, the browser implementers were kind of working alongside the CSS working group, essentially. And there's this kind of to and fro thing going on where the spec's developing and implementations are happening. And they kind of got to this point where both Firefox and Blink and also the WebKit implementation in Safari were kind of ready to go at the same time. And so this is pretty cool because it landed and all of a sudden lots of people had access to Grid in browsers, and Edge are also updating the implementation, so they'll join the party fairly soon. So that's been pretty cool, and it's not happened like that before for something so big to just be there.
Has
available
it shut down that are you know do you find that it has shut down that argument a little bit, like, sure, it's cool, but I can't actually use it. You know,
no.
That, I mean,
yeah, you still get that because people are very much tied to this. It doesn't matter. I mean, we've been saying websites don't need to look the same in every browser since 2001, when we
kind
first
of a losing battle.
You know, yeah, when we first started using CSS for layout, we were saying, you know, actually, it's okay if websites don't look identical in Netscape 4 and IE 4. And it's like, I'm still saying it, you know, here I am. And it's like, this isn't going to go away. You know, if people have got this fixed model of what it is to make a website, it's almost impossible to convince them of anything else. It's surprising when it's younger people. And I think, do you not realize that websites look different on your phone to on your desktop? Mm. You know, it's not just a browser thing. It's a, you know, what are you using? What device are you using thing? And so, yeah, I don't get it. I don't get that idea these things have to look the same. And so it's kind of difficult to argue against something you just don't understand.
I also think that, you know, some of the voices that have been loudest in explaining Grid and evangelizing Grid and talking about Grid and helping make Grid happen have been women. And we're just not believed. You know, Rachel says, hey, this is going to come out. And people are like, no, it's not. and I think people will, you know, they'll realize that, it's like a matter of fact. Like, it either, you know, how many browsers actually have Grid at the moment. And it is, like Rachel said, it's a pretty big change to how CSS worked in the past. Where with Flexbox, for example, the working group had ideas about how it should work. They wanted to implement those ideas as a rough draft to see whether or not it was a good idea. And then as they started to figure out how it was going, they wanted to be able to change it a whole bunch of times, and they changed the names of everything. And there was this period of time when, you know, it's one thing to create a way to create a rounded corner. It's fairly simple. But something as complicated as Flexbox, there needed to be this period of draft, you know, where it kept changing for a while. And now all of that happened with prefixes in real browsers, and we were shipping websites with Flexbox, and Flexbox kept changing. And I think that really traumatized a lot of front-end developers, a lot of designers, because we're like, I'm not going to do that again. That was really painful. I had to learn three different versions of Flexbox, and it kept changing, and it was buggy, and oh my gosh, forget it. I'm not going to use Grid if Grid is going to be 3 years of pain like that. But the good news is that the CSS working group also said, yeah, we're not going to do that again. And all of that necessity for having a rough draft and changing the names and trying it out and making it work in different ways and having it be slightly different in different browsers for a while, all of that happened. It just happened in a place where everybody listening to the show had no idea. Yeah, because it was not instead of being in browsers with a prefix, it was in browsers behind a flag. And so none of us were shipping code. So there was 5 years between the first implementation and the final implementations, and it did change a lot, but none of us knew it. So anybody who's listening who thinks, I don't want to get in too soon because I don't want to have to go through 3 years of pain, great news. The 3 years of pain actually was 5 years, and it's over. It's already done.
Yeah, it was only me who had to update anything. There was a point at which I was presenting about Grid, you know, well, since sort of 2012, I was presenting about it. And I used to kind of turn up to do a presentation and find that, like, the browser implementation I was using as a reference had just changed. You know, there was new stuff in Canary or whatever. And I'm, like, sort of scrabbling to figure out what I've got to change my presentation slides to. It was all great fun.
Well, you wrote a little book, and then the book shipped, and then the spec changed.
Oh, no. Yeah. And the story of Grid and Flexbox is interesting because it is that difference between vendor prefixes and feature flags in browsers. And the problem we have with the feature flags in browsers is that people don't try stuff out. Getting anyone to try out Grid before it landed was incredibly difficult, which meant that we didn't get the sort of feedback that we would have done had it been.
There was trade-offs. It's better in the end, but still.
Yeah, it's, and it, you know, I keep saying to developers, you know, if you want to offer feedback on specs, you're going to have to get used to the fact these things are going to be hidden behind flags. You know, enable the experimental web platform features flag and play around with stuff, because that's how you get to be involved.
So this thing had this 5-year period, as you say. And it went through changes, and it. But okay, ignore all that. It's here now. It miraculously ships in all these browsers with no vendor prefixes.
Well, Asterisk here, right? Because the browser I'm staring at right this very second, my browser of choice, Edge, I guess the story is they have said we are going to ship it, but it's not in the like creators update of Windows, which is kind of the most recent
version
of Edge, right? So for the next, in Windows users or Edge users, we'll call them us Edge users, won't get this for a bit, right? Maybe like 6 or 12 months.
Right, yeah. I don't know what their timeframes are. They are updating. I know they were.
We did ask too when they announced it, and they're cagey about it.
They won't say anything. I mean, who does? I have a product. Right. We don't tell people when things are going to ship. But the thing is that, you know, this spec came from Microsoft. You know, it was their spec. The initial editors and were from Microsoft. The prefixed spec, so the MS prefix spec that is in IE10, 11, and Edge, is essentially that early spec. I've got a bunch of stuff on my site where I've sort of written about it. It's usable. It doesn't have all of the things that are in sort of modern Grid, as it were, because it is essentially the 5-year-old spec. And it's kind of where it all came from. but it is perfectly usable as a fallback if you take a bit of care. So, you know, although, no, it's not great that Edge didn't manage to ship with everything else, it would have been lovely if they had, but you do have grid layout from IE10 and up, which, you know, once Edge updates and we can sort of treat Edge as a modern browser with grid, it'll mean that we can do very nice fallbacks for the IEs that people are really concerned about, because most people aren't worried about anything below 10. So that's there, and that's kind of a good thing. You know, we've got the ability to do some stuff for the browsers that are likely to hang around.
Yeah, I've talked to some folks who say, well, you know, we build websites or software for an intranet, and 80% of our customers are using IE11, and so there's no way I can use grid. And I tell them, well, just pretend like it's 2012. Like, master and learn the original specification version of grid and write your code to match that spec, and sort of stay in that time machine of back in 2012. And then other people say, well, you know, we have 8% of our folks or 4% of our folks are an IE, and we really need to support them. And I think, yes, you should support them. Maybe you want to create, maybe for you, you want to ignore the prefix version, the old version of the spec, and just create a layout that works one way in grid and works another way without grid. And that can be for IE and for Edge for in the meanwhile. And it also can be for some of these other browsers that don't have grid, because there are quite a few. They're mostly like QQ browser, the UC browser, the Yandex browser, Opera Mobile, BlackBerry browser, Android browser. Like, they're all the phone browsers that are forks of Blink.
Should we just do mobile? What's the web? That's in our list here. What's the mobile story with Grid?
Well, so there is mobile. Chrome for Android, Firefox for Android, iOS all have Grid. But all of the other browsers, and you don't even know how many browsers are out there, like some game console browser that's never going to get updated, but there's a user who's really loves your site and needs to be able to get to your site. You need to support them. So they don't have grid at all. And that's fine. You know, like, write your code in such a way that the site's not broken so they can get to things. Probably their screens are narrow, although maybe not. They may have some sort of tablet with an old version of Android browser, and that's not going to get updated because Android doesn't really update software very well. Or, you know, you don't know. So I wouldn't assume that they're skinny layouts, but they might be skinny layouts. Give them something simple. Give them something maybe that has floats, float-based layout.
And that's doable, right? Because the timing of this is such that the at supports thing is like good. Unlike the story with Flexbox was a little weird because there was browsers that supported some of Flexbox but not at supports, and it was like, ooh, that was weird. But with Grid, we can just use it, right?
Yeah, and it's not just using feature queries, using at supports. Defined in the Grid spec and in the Flexbox spec is essentially how this stuff overwrites older layout methods. So, for instance, if you use display inline block to do a kind of a sort of simple grid, well, if you then turn that inline block item into a grid item because you use display grid on its parent, it stops being inline block just by default. It sort of loses all the properties of inline block. Same with float, same with display table cell. If you're using sort of display table to do some sorts of bits of layout.
It reminds me a little bit of, like, if you say position absolute on something, like, you don't have to tell it to not float anymore.
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's all defined in the spec. So you find that actually a lot of this stuff, you can just, you know, make a basic float-based layout and then just start doing grid layout. And other than what you need to stick into your feature queries are things like resetting widths. Because if you've got something which is floated and set to 33% width, and then it becomes a grid item, it's going to end up 33% width of the grid track that it's in, for example. So you're going to need to reset that width to auto, and you can do that inside your feature queries. I'm finding I end up with like a big block of really just resetting stuff to like width auto.
You're living this, right? Because sometimes the story is, you can do a fallback layout, but most people, like, they're either going all in on this or they're not. Or is that not the story here? Are people actually making fallback layouts?
Yeah, I'm seeing that. I'm starting to collect sort of examples of people using this stuff. I mean, I've always felt that the web should work for everyone. I mean, in our own product, we don't use grid yet. We did our UI design with a lot of Flexbox, but Perch has to work back to IE9, which doesn't support Flexbox at all. It didn't take me very long to to deal with that older browser. Because if you build well and you build carefully and you know what you've done, it's often quite easy to enhance with these newer layout methods and not kind of just leave things a mess. You don't need to do that because these things overwrite each other quite nicely.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for one, I think people think that using grid means every single item on the page is going to be laid out using CSS grid, when really using grid means in certain places you're using grid and in other places you're using just a regular flow. In other places you're using a float or an inline block or a flex box, and you're kind of combining these things and nesting these things together, and you're thinking through the architecture of your code and how your code is working. The same way you would think through the architecture of your code when you're establishing a color palette or a way that your fonts are going to work. And but because, especially for the last, I don't know, 6 years, people have not been writing layout code. They've been reaching for a framework like Bootstrap or Foundation or one of these other frameworks. And then they've just been applying classes to this page. And so a lot of folks don't really have the skills to do any layout even anymore. Even those of us who hand-coded float layouts like a boss 10 years ago stopped doing it. And so now we're 5 years old, rusty. Like our those skills have atrophied.
You think of a grid as X columns with X gutter.
Yeah, and how do you make it happen? By applying a bunch of classes. Well, what do you do if you don't have that tool? It's like, well, you need to write CSS is what you need to do. So I think there are ways in which using grid can easily be, well, you're going to use grid on this little widget. You're going to use grid on this particular part of the whole page structure. You're going to use grid on this particular thing over here. And then writing fallbacks for those particular moments where grid exists is not nearly as hard as people imagine it's going to be. I've had people complain, what I guess on Twitter, people complain on Twitter, and they say,
oh, okay, we'll circle back to that.
They say, I'm not going to write two layouts. That's too much work. And I think, wow, I can't explain in 140 characters that that's actually not how it works. But that's not how it works. Like, you're not going to have to write two completely separate layouts. You're going to come up with one layout that is complicated enough to handle a wide variety of situations, including different size screens, including different levels of support for certain CSS properties.
Can we do possibilities with grid for a second? Can we, like, I don't know, we don't have to like define what grid is, but I, you know, if grid isn't, if we're saying grid isn't X columns with X gutters, even though I guess it could be, right? What is grid that's different than that? Like, why should somebody be excited about grid? What are the possibilities there? I mean, I know it's like endless, but
yeah. So we have been in this world where we've been doing these 12 columns and all the columns are the same size as the other columns. Sometimes people do 16 or sometimes they get really innovative and they do 24. Right. But with grid, you can very, very easily do 11 or 9. Like, it's just as easy to do 11 or 9 or some other odd number or some other, you could do 7 and over here you do 5 or you could do 12. I mean, 13, or you could.
And then, okay, 14. Now I'm going to retort. Well, I use the SUSY framework, which allows me to define how many grids I want on demand.
That's
so
true.
I don't need grid because I already have that.
So, okay, I'm starting with as close to how what we're used to, and I'm going to go out. So another thing is it's very easy, just as easy, instead of making them all be the same, to make them different sizes. So you could do a ratio-based array. You could do first column is 1, and the second column is 1.6, and the third column is 2, and the fourth column is 2.4. So you've got kind of a more of a ratio-based array going on. Again, that's a thing that SUSY or Singularity, and a Singularity especially, let you do, or GridSet app. Grid also lets you have rows, which, oh my gosh, rows. And when I first heard about rows, I thought, oh, this will make the people who like lining things up horizontally very happy. I guess that's what that's for. We can line things up horizontally more easily. I don't necessarily care about that all the time. Headline, baselines being exactly the same as, you know. Also, it doesn't. It's actually not a great tool for fixing baseline alignment problems. But what grid does do that no tool we've ever had does, or no tool we've had since we've started using CSS for layout has had, is the ability to create vertical white space. So you have rows and your whole top row could be empty. You could have a lot of space. You can actually place things on the page both horizontally and vertically, and you can create white space in your design in a way that was impossible before.
That's a great way to put that. I love that. So possibilities, I mean, that's a whole different world then.
Yes.
Literally was impossible.
A whole different world that was literally impossible. And then there's a way in which grid, I mean, I could do a 5-day workshop on the answer to this question. There's a way in which grid, everything we've been doing so far, especially with these frameworks, the columns didn't actually exist literally. We pretended that they existed and we made them exist by putting content in certain places and by making that content the width of the column. So most of those columns were 60 pixels wide, or if it was three of them wide, then it was 240 plus whatever the gutters were, usually 20. So that's going to be 280, right? Like, so those items, that sidebar, that column of text, that logo would go on the grid because it was the size of the track of the column itself. Where with grid, the size of the content and the size of the track are actually independent of each other because the track actually exists. The track is a construct in CSS. Doesn't exist visually on the page, but it's a space that CSS defines. And then when you place content, your content can go inside of a track that has a certain size, and you can set it up so that the track tells the content how big to be, which is what we've been doing for the last decade. So, you know, I want this to go across four columns. I want the image to be 100% wide, and I want the text to, I've got lots of text. So then your image is four columns wide and your text is four columns wide, right? Like that. But you can instead have content that's not the size of the track. So maybe that image is actually 300 pixels wide and your track is squishy, and there's a way in which things are like your content could be horizontally centered or set to be at the end, or vertically centered or set to be at the end. So you can start using these alignment properties that perhaps people are familiar with from Flexbox to place the content into a particular space that's not the whole track. It's a place in space. Or you also can set it up so that the tracks, instead of the tracks having a size and telling the content how big to be, you can set it up so that the content has a size and the content tells the tracks how big to be, which starts to really change things. And you can combine things. So you can have like one column be totally a fixed size, and then a couple more columns be like a third of what's left, and then another column be the size of the content that's inside of it, which is always different because you're not sure. It's a content management system and it's kind of always different, right? So
along those lines, there's all that stuff takes syntax. So I wonder if we could go there for a minute on the, like, when this shipped, it's not like border radius, which is a property and a value and it does a thing. This is display colon grid, right? But then a bucket of other stuff.
Yeah, 17 other properties, yeah.
Yeah, I think people are, when they look at this and they're like, oh no, there's all this extra CSS to learn. And the reason there's this whole bunch of new stuff and a bunch of new constructs, we have things like min-max and so on, is because...
So min-max, just, do you want to do that one? Or
yeah,
you,
okay.
You go.
So min-max lets you define the minimum size of a track and the maximum size of a track, which is very useful when you're dealing with something which defines itself on the container. As Jen just said, where all of our previous layout methods, what you're doing is you're defining the item itself. And even with Flexbox, if you want to create a Flexbox-based grid, you have to set widths on the Flex items themselves. You don't do it from the container. You say display Flex on the container, but the actual items have to have width, either with a width or with a Flex basis to actually constrain them. With grid, you set up your tracks. Now, because you're setting up tracks and then putting stuff into them, you need a way of saying, well, I don't want this track to be any smaller than, say, 200 pixels, but I want it to grow. If it's a row track, you might want it always to be 200 pixels unless too much content goes in there that makes it taller. So then you want it to be a maximum of auto so that it will expand to take the content. So that's what min-max does. It lets you say, well, visually, I'd like these rows to look like they're 200 pixels tall, but if in my CMS someone adds a really big news item that I wasn't expecting, it will then grow and become auto. So there's a whole bunch of clever stuff inside the spec.
It kind of needs to exist, right? Because it exists in places that you can't say min width, max width, because that's not appropriate. Like, you can't do that in the syntax. Yeah.
So where you're dealing with something which is all defined on the container, you have to have all these constructs in order to define that. And what I say to people is, don't worry about the fact there's a ton of it. You know, start simply. Say display grid, you know, set up some columns and some rows, and then see what happens, and then see what problems you start to encounter, and then see if the spec has solved them, because a lot of the time it will have done, because this stuff's been thought through. But you don't need to sort of look at the spec and go, oh, I've got to learn all these properties today before I can start to use grid layout. No, you need to say display grid and grid template columns. And
sure. And if you do that, it actually does solve the, like, replaces what Bootstrap can do in very like quickly. Two lines of code.
Right. Yeah. So very, very quickly you can replace your Bootstrap style grid. And if that's what you want, and, you know, let's say, oh, well, everyone should be moving away from this. Well, there's a lot of places where that sort of thing is very useful. You know, I mean, I spend my time building a UI. You know, I'm not doing creative web design. I'm solving UI challenges. And for me, a lot of the interest I had initially in Grid and in Flexbox is that. It's just making it easier for us to create these dashboards and these application UIs, which are fiddly and they're very difficult to do with floats and positioning things. And, you know, being able to clean up all that code and make much more flexible and responsive user very interfaces. Satisfying. It's very satisfying. It's lovely. And that's my thing. You know, I'm not a creative. I'm a programmer and you know, I'm not a designer, but what I do find great joy in is making these interfaces really usable and making them fast and clean and accessible. And so that's something that really interests me about these layout methods.
Well, and Grid was invented after these smartphones showed up. So there were a lot of ideas in Grid that have been around for a long time, back to the 90s. But the actual specification that became CSS Grid was written with all of the needs of responsive web design in mind, and with all of the needs of applications in mind. And it was designed to be a modern system that works in the way that we really need a system to work, where everything we've been using, like Bootstrap or all the rest, were kind of hacks in order to fill in a gap because we were desperate for something that was better than the struggles we were having. And so those frameworks like Bootstrap, I mean, it really solved amazing problems for a very long time. It's just that it still was limited by what you could solve with a hack. And there were still all these strange limits to, you know, oh, that design that you've emailed to me, that PDF I just received, I can't actually implement that because that's not how things work. And, oh, we have to put a character limit in our CMS to keep people from putting in headlines that have more than 36 characters, because otherwise the entire layout breaks. Like, there's a way in which we've been stuck with these less than satisfactory tools, where the new reality is that the CSS that we have with Grid is incredibly robust. Like, it's not nearly as fragile. You can throw all kinds of things at it and it's going to be okay. You don't have to deal with all the fiddliness. You don't have to worry as much about cross-browser testing because it's not as about to break as some of these other tools that we've used have been. And in that way, I think it will free up a lot of the energy that we've spent trying to fix these hacks and hacking around the limitations of
people. Not only did they drop in all these browsers, but most, they did a good job.
Yeah. Too, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's very interoperable, you know, around the edges where there are things that weren't kind of finished in the spec when these things ship, you know, that once you get in some of the finer points of alignment, you might find a few sort of
interrupt. There is a bit of a cross-browser story.
Interrupters, but they're being fixed very quickly. And, yeah. You know, as people find this stuff, they're getting fixed incredibly quickly, which is great. Because the browser vendors want this to be great. They want us using it. They want it to be interoperable.
Yeah. Dave, you've gotten to play a little bit, right? What have you experimented with?
Well, you know, standing on the shoulders of these two giants here, I've been able to play around. I definitely was the type of person who's like, you know, I'm going to let it blow up in everyone else's face, and then I'm going to take a play. I knew the March day was coming, and I just was like, well, I'm going to play. And, you know, I think I shared it on Twitter, but I have this, you know, client with a product grid, you know, a classic grid of products I was doing like a flexbox grid, you know, but you know, if there's only like 10 in a grid of three, you have that one child that goes full width in a flexbox one. So you have to write all these rules, kind of similar to a float layout. It ended up being about like 50 lines of code. And multiply that over, some of these products have pictures, some are just kind of like little, you know, like smaller, I don't know, icons or something. You know, you think of like a three column, here's the features of our product grid. You know, you kind of want those to break in different places. So I ended up duplicating this like 50 lines of grid code like three times. And so I have 150 lines of grid code for like one page. Then I just took grid for a spin and it's three lines of CSS.
It's great, isn't it?
With that, I don't even know how you like figured out this spell. I'll call it a spell, Rachel. It's the autofill repeat min content 13M1F.
So, you know, a lot of times I think of like spell. If you have 20 cards sitting there and you had to write breakpoints that were like, I want them to be five up at this breakpoint, four up at this breakpoint, three up at this breakpoint. And it did end up being a lot of code. And now grid has some fancy thing that just can kind of, it knows when to break.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and one of them had like a sidebar and the other didn't. And so I was like, oh, I have to like write code for like, to like take the sidebar into account, but
let's
talk use Rachel's.
What does autofill do?
Yeah,
autofill. Well, the sort of the best way to describe it is like with Flexbox. If you have a bunch of items and you've given them, say, a flex space, I don't know, say 200. You've got a bunch of items, a flex space of 200 pixels, and as your screen size, the container they're in gets bigger, you get more on the line. And if you've set it to flex wrap, they'll wrap round when there's too many. But you kind of get this thing where they spread out, as Dave just said, if there's not the same number on the next line as in the top one. The reason that happens is because each row, if you're working in rows with Flexbox, each row becomes its own flex container. So space distribution happens across the row. And that's really what's meant by one-dimensional layout. You're laying things out as a row, or if you're working with flex direction column, as a column, but you're not laying them out in both at the same time, which is what grid does. So with grid, you can say repeat, and you can say autofill, so as many or autofit, there's a slight difference between them, but roughly the same. So you say autofill, so as many columns of this size. So you could say as many columns of 200 pixels, that won't give you a flexible column. That will get you as many columns of 200 pixels as will fit in a gap at the end. But if you then use this min-max thing that I mentioned before and say as many columns with a minimum size of 200 pixels and a maximum size of 1FR, then any leftover space gets distributed. So what the end result is that you get as many flexibly sized columns of around 200 pixels as will fit in, and then the items will go on to the next row, but they'll line up underneath the items above because you've created strict row and column tracks. So things stay in their tracks. They don't spread out. The space distribution happens across the entire grid because it's two-dimensional rather than across the row.
This is kind of a mind-blowing moment because when you're just learning, at least this happened to me, is, okay, I get it. There's columns and rows.
Yep.
So I take out a piece of paper and a pencil and I draw lines, vertical lines and horizontal lines. And that's me setting up my grid template rows and areas. Mm-hmm. So now I can fill in, where do I want this particular element to go on this grid? And you can do that, right? But you don't have to, because it's kind of both. And I think that's a little mind-blowing. Sometimes you do that and sometimes you don't.
Yeah. I mean, the auto placement stuff's fantastic. You can just chuck a bunch of stuff at a grid, give some rules around it, and grid will just sort it out for you. Yeah, or you can position things exactly where you want them on the page.
Yeah, with grid, there's 18 properties. And I was going to mention this earlier, but I wrote a little blog post that we can put in the show notes that's like, wait, 18? Do I have to learn them all? I'm like, no, just learn these few, and then you can learn these, and then you can learn these, right? So there's 18 properties, and then they have a bunch of different values. There's also some other units, like FR units, min-max units. That stuff's new for grid. But then there's some other stuff like min, content and max content and fit content. Like, there are these other concepts that actually have nothing to do with grid necessarily, but they're things that we've been ignoring for a while. And now that we have this layout system of CSS grid, they're super helpful and cool, and they do amazing things. So there's other stuff to learn, right? So there's all this code to learn. But honestly, once I wrap my head around how grid works, learning the code was not nearly as hard as I thought it was. It turns out, in my opinion, the hard part is changing the mental model from how things used to be to how things actually are now.
Yeah, definitely.
And figuring out, like, what the heck is going on around here? Why do I only need two lines of code when before I needed 40? And why is the browser... like? And so one of the things that is kind of the first change in mental model that I explain to people to understand is CSS Grid is written, it's a powerful tool set that lets us get the browser to do more math and lets us do less math. And there's a way in which there are times when we, as the authors of the website, the people who write the code, are going to tell the browser where we want things to go. And we're going to tell it how many columns to make. We're going to tell it how many rows to make. We're going to tell it how big we want those columns or rows to be. We're going to tell it where we want the content to go. I want this header to go here. I want this sidebar to go there. I want the footer to go down here, right? Like, plenty of times when we're doing that. And that's basically what we've done in the past, how these other systems worked. But there's another way in which the browser can do a lot of the work for us, where we don't tell it things, and it just starts making stuff up. So you can define a lot of columns, and it will go, hey, we need some rows around here. And it will start making up a bunch of rows that you didn't actually know were a thing, but it makes them up for you. Or if you just say display grid on a particular element, and then you define some columns for that element, it will automatically start taking that content. And it will take the first item and put it in the first cell, and take the second item and put it in the second cell, and take the third item and put it in the third cell. And it's like, I'm going to lay out things for you. Here you go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you're like, well, okay, that's cool. I'm done now. I only need two lines of code because all I need
to do. You might actually want to do that, yes. Right? You might want to, yeah. Okay.
There are plenty of times when you want to do that. So like for an image gallery where you have a bunch of photos and you basically just want a bunch of photos in a row and then a bunch of photos in the next row and a bunch of, maybe those photos are square. Like we've seen that layout a million times, right? Like, so you get a bunch of squares and you just want rows of squares. You want each square to be no smaller than a certain size and no bigger than a certain size. So rather than having to figure out all of the math that would give you what you want, you can just say to the browser, this is what I want. Would you please make me, I don't know, some number of columns? And can you, like, don't make anything smaller than this size and don't make it any bigger than that size? And it's like, okay, and you're done. You can go home and you can, I don't know, watch TV or something like
that. You have to wrap your head around that.
Yeah.
Right. You have to know, okay, it's not just like I'm using grid layout or I'm not. It's like I'm going to use grid layout and I'm going to use this idea where I'm filling in the squares of exactly where I want things to go. Or no, I'm going to let the browser kind of drop things into place where I want it to. Or I'm going to use some kind of combination of both. I want the header up here and the footer down here, but I want in the middle stuff to kind of automatically
happen. Yep. And for me, to me, that's the harder thing to learn. And that's the sort of understanding the range of possibilities, especially around this dance with the browser where it does certain things for you and you do other things. Because if you explicitly define things, if you explicitly define a certain number of items a certain sizing of something, or you explicitly place items at a certain place, then you have to change those explicit directions at different breakpoints. And like, so in that case, you do need a lot of code. But that understanding of what's possible, of what grid can do for you and letting it versus making other kinds of demands, that to me was way harder to wrap my head around than learning the syntax. And in that way, these sort of like cheat sheets or these really shallow blog posts that are like intro to grid are great places to kind of get started, or maybe to look up the syntax when you forgot it, but they're not getting at this harder part, which is understanding how the whole, what is this creature? Like, we just got this giant creature who showed up who's here to help us. Like, what in the world does this creature want to do for us?
Yeah, I think that we'll see more of those, the sort of real worked examples, and we're starting to see them. And I think as people start to get to grips with it and get past the, oh, this is really cool, look how little CSS I need to write, here's my blog post about not writing very much CSS. And that's great because it shows people, I think, I really think that people have to hear this stuff from a lot of voices before they're like, oh, right, yeah. And also...
10th blog post, I'm great, you'll get it. Yeah,
and also because different people explain things in different ways. You know, I have a very specific way of explaining things and some people think that's great and other people might totally leave them cold. So that somebody else will explain exactly the same thing as me, just in a different way and, you know, maybe a more visual way. And that'll work. And that's great, you know, having all these people doing stuff. But it's, I think, the next level. And what I've been starting
don't
to
screw
try-
it up, people.
Yeah. What I've been starting to try and do in some of the stuff I've been writing recently and certainly in my conference talks is to try and take real examples and say, look, here is something that we need to build. And here's this sort of way we might have approached this. And here's how we can approach it with Grid. And here are the problems we run into. And sometimes Grid doesn't solve the problem. And okay, so Grid doesn't solve the problem. What other spec do we need? Or does this CSS not exist yet? Well, maybe this is CSS we can invent if we know we've got this problem, because that's a big deal. You know, we've got level 2 of Grid, you know, on the horizon. That'll start work on that. So what else do we need? And until you start looking at it from this problem-solving point of view, not just saying, well, this is all the CSS we've got, so we'd best just make the most of it. Once you realize that CSS is developing and you can impact it, then you can start looking at it and saying, well, if I was to solve this problem in a really good way, how would I do it? And if that doesn't exist, let's raise an issue against the spec and see if we can get it to exist.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Rollbar. That's rollbar.com. It's error tracking software for your web app or your web app of any kind. It's a JavaScript web app, any of the major frameworks of JavaScript, Ruby, PHP, even a WordPress site, Laravel, your iOS app, your PHP app, .NET, Rails, everything. You need to have error tracking software installed on your app. Your app is throwing errors of some kind. Are they big? Are they little? Do you know exactly what they are? Do you have no idea what they are? Are they screwing up your users? You just don't know unless you're tracking it. Install Rollbar in your app and get this dashboard of when the errors are happening, how much they're happening. Be alerted. Have charts. Assign them to your team members. Know what's going on with errors. You know, send them over to Slack if you want to. You know, and it kind of smart groups all your errors together. You know, make it, gamify it in a way. Get to the point where you're, you know, you've working with your team to eliminate all of the errors that are happening in your app. It's just a great thing to have a dashboard for all of your errors, and kind of like a not optional thing, if you ask me, in web development. So check out rollbar.com for all they have to offer. It's pretty sweet. Here's one that feels related to this stuff and is a common question that I've heard and we got specifically for the show. Is the you know, and we've talked about Flexbox and Grid. What's the story of them playing together? How does that work? Are they in competition with each other? What's the story about that?
There's this group of people who are going around and they're reading all the code for all the websites. And you're not actually allowed to ship a website now if you're using both Flexbox and Grid at the same time. You have to choose one. And you're only allowed to... No, they're designed to
go
together.
They have big leather boots.
Yeah, they're designed to go together. And so the reality is that if you want to line things up in two directions, like have a layout where... sort of the layout understands itself and things line themselves up and things are able to be lined up with what's going on in both directions, then you want to use Grid. If you want a layout where sort of things are only lined up in one direction and in the other direction they're sort of squishy and it totally depends on the length of the content, and like if you look at a brick wall, the bricks don't line up in both directions. They line up in one direction and in the other direction they're staggered. If you want a layout that's more like that, then you need to use Flexbox.
I think what I often say to people, if you're using Flexbox and you're starting to put widths on your flex items, so you're starting to say, oh, this needs to be 33.33%, that is probably a sign that you need to use Grid layout, because what you're doing is you're actually stopping, you're breaking the flexibility of Flexbox at that point. And the other thing is the fact that Grid works from the container in. So if you're you're defining a grid, and then you're putting stuff into the grid. Either you're letting the browser do that, or you're deciding where it goes. Flexbox very much works from the content out. So you've got a bunch of stuff. You want to just space it out along the row. And you want the spaces in between the items to be the same. That's kind of a sort of a Flexbox-y use case.
In Flexbox, you're doing an awful lot of work on the elements themselves. Yes. Whereas Grid, you do an awful lot of work on the parent.
See, I've heard you say that description before, Rachel. We're gonna have lunch at one of these places. I disagree with that description. The last part of the description of Flexbox being content out and Grid being layout in.
The thing is that if you use Grid in that way, you could do that. You can allow Grid to take the content size, but it's going to do it all the way up the track.
Yes, we agree on that.
So it's still happening from the container because it's your entire track. There's no way, and the number of people who email me about this, they've got an item.
Yeah.
Which is bigger than the other items in their track, and they kind of want Grid to somehow make a track which bulges out at the point of that item. Now, I'm seeing that several times a week at the moment, people asking that question.
Right.
And it's like that is a fundamental misunderstanding of what a grid is. Because a grid is like a grid. But that is something that gets people, and that comes from the Flexbox use cases.
Yeah.
So I think that is, it's fundamentally different. You can allow content to affect the size of your tracks, but it's going to affect the whole track.
This is a little metaphorical too, because they both have properties in which that you can apply to the children elements to do specific things. It's just kind of a way to think about it, right?
Well, and what we're talking about right here is that, you know, like I was saying, imagine a brick wall where all the bricks are somehow different sizes. If you're going to force all the bricks to be aligned to their left edges or aligned to their right edges or centered, it doesn't matter. But for simplicity's sake, let's just imagine that all the bricks get aligned to their left edges. And there's always like all the way down the entire height of the wall, every brick has to line up with the left edge, even though all the bricks are different sizes or different widths, unlike real bricks. You're going to end up with all these spaces in your wall. And if what you want is instead for your bricks, your stones or whatever, to nestle up against each other, no matter how wide they are, then that's Flexbox. You've got to use Flexbox for that. So in that way, yeah, we totally agree on that, Rachel.
I sort of see like Flexbox as like, I'm going to give you content, browser. Good luck. Bye. I got to go to lunch. Like, But you're going to do some weird things with it. Good luck. And if there's like a giant image, it's that giant image is going to take up the whole, you know, page. But with Grid, it's kind of like, well, I actually want to kind of control this both vertically and horizontally. So I'm going to set up some rules and I want you to fill out this, like I said, like a spell, basically. It's like a spell you cast in the browser. It's like, I get it. I'm going to lay it out like that.
I think most use cases, I don't know how this is going to play out. I have no idea, but I kind of suspect that the row thing is going to be like 5% of usage of Grid. I would still think most usage of Grid in the end is going to be column only.
See, I agree, but that vertical gutter that Rachel was talking about is so new and different and cool. Like right now you have to do it like on the child, you know, element, you're like, okay, margin 2% or bottom.
We have, and what is it, gutter or grid gap?
Grid gap, yeah. It hopefully will come to Flexbox as well, actually, because at the moment we have to do like margins, then negative margin out the container to get your gaps between flex items. I think there's a fair case for having a sort of a gap property for Flexbox as well. And it's certainly in the working group issues. There's an issue raised to actually bring something like grid gap to Flexbox because it makes
a lot of sense.
It's modeled
grid gap
on
like the best thing.
Yeah, it's modeled on column gap for multi-column layout, so it's the same sort of idea.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Column gap. I remember.
That's the name dash gap, so that it's the same.
So I imagine we'll get flex gap. Right. Is probably, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's going to be a case for rows. I'm advocating for white space. I'm advocating for not making all the content shove up against the top of the page. So
yeah,
I think rows can be used to great skill to make some space in our layouts.
I agree. I think it's so new. And we just in general, I don't trust verticality on the web. I'm just the hugest cynic. It's like never going to work, you know, but I'm curious to see what experiments and what kind of production stuff people launch with it, because I think it has potential. It's like just another whole other dimension, basically. And you just have this potential to kind of control things vertically without it looking crappy, because like it's on a grid, it's on a rhythm, it's on, you know, a predictable, I guess, baseline. And I think that's new and neat and interesting.
I think there's got to be this, there's going to be this phase where at the moment, if anyone sort of thinks up a web design, they think of something that can be built with our existing tools, because that's what we've been able to do for X number of years. So there's kind of got to be this process where people learn the new tool. And they'll probably learn it by building the things they built before, because that's familiar and that's how we learn to build things a lot of the time. But then once they know it, once they're not stuck in this mindset of, oh, everything has to rise up to the top because that's how these things work, then we'll hopefully start to see the new stuff come out and the new ideas, because people will have this idea that, oh, well, actually, I can do this new stuff. I'm not tied to this old model. But that's going to take a bit of time, because people have to learn how to use it first.
Like you were both were saying, it's a mental game primarily, muscle memory.
Yeah, and I mean, I do think there's something about what will the future of the web be? What will this medium become? You know, at the end of our lifetimes, what will it be? I think that we're in an inflection point right now where I agree it's going to take time. It's going to take another 18 months at a minimum, but we do have a choice, those of us listening, to either, you know, just kind of do everything the way we've been doing it, like it's 2010, and just quadruple down on those types of designs. They'd just be like, yay, it took less code. Or to really say, wow, we finally have the tools that we wished we had in 1997 and 1999 and 2002, when we were struggling, when we were creative, when we were trying to figure this stuff out, when we were having to deal with IE3 and IE4 and Netscape 4. And, you know, what happened after that beat a lot of that creativity out of us. And we kind of got to this place where it's like a factory around here. We just, everybody churn out stuff with Bootstrap, hurry up, do it as fast as you can. We got to meet this deadline for our VC meeting, blah, blah, blah. Right. Like, are we going to, like, there's, I don't know. That's all the work I've been doing for the last 3.5 years, just kind of focused on hopefully helping things go in the direction which I hope they do, which is, you know, better work, more beautiful work, more creative work, work that's easier to use, work that is less, you know, websites that are less frenetic and less kind of crazy, but help us instead relax and focus.
Maybe there's a hurdle in that. A lot of times we think of, if we reach for a tool that isn't native technology, it's an add-on, it's something that was built to help us, to give us more power, that we assume we should keep using that because that's where the power is. I mean, I have three questions here on this list that we haven't gotten to from actual people that wrote in, but they're all stuff that we talked about. All three of them mention the word Bootstrap, and they're all people that are like, it's really, my customers ask about it, I use it, why would I reach for this? And it's very weird to say that even though that's an add-on piece of technology from a third party, it's, you know, Grid, the native technology is 100 times more powerful. That's a weird thing to tell people.
Yeah, I think sometimes people are asking for something like Bootstrap. You know, what they're wanting is, it's a bit like people ask for, say, WordPress. What they're wanting is something which they understand as the basis for their website. And they understand it on some level. You know, someone said, oh, well, if you use Bootstrap, then any developer will be able to come along, because lots of people know Bootstrap, and they'll be able to make changes to your website because it's built on this framework rather than on someone's idea of how to use CSS. And I think a lot of people have been burned by ending up with unmaintainable sites. And so I think that sometimes people, you know, people's clients are asking for this stuff because they've heard that it's, you know, it's come from somewhere and it's solid and it's real, and we, you know, other people are going to understand it in the future, and someone else will be able to work on this website. And that is a hurdle that I think individual designers,
coming from a real place.
Yeah, and let me say, it's why people, you know, it's that sort of, you know, no one ever got fired by choosing IBM or whatever it was. You know, it's that kind of idea that, oh, if you pick a big player and you use that, well, you're probably not going to get into trouble for that. You know, it's going to, you know, people say, oh, that was a sensible decision, because lots of people like to use that technology, and they can't be wrong. It's come from a place where, so I think it's that, and that is a difficult thing, because you have to have some confidence to, as an individual, if you're as a small company, to say to a client, well, actually, there's a better way of doing, of meeting your goals, of solving your problems, and this is how I want to do it. And to be able to explain that to a client, you know, you need to be quite confident yourself in what you're recommending. And I say, you know, we see that with all kinds of technology choices, not just something like Bootstrap, or to say we see that with CMS decisions and e-commerce decisions and all sorts of things. It takes quite a lot of confidence to go against it when a client has heard the name and think, oh, that's a good buzzword.
Yeah, but I have to say, I'm just tired. I'm just worn out by this sense sometimes in our industry that if you use the hot tool that big famous company X is telling you you should use, then you will also get rich because you'll be able to VC exit your startup. Like it almost makes no sense when you put it together like that. But sometimes I feel like, well, you know, Twitter Bootstrap became really popular because it was put out by two people who worked at Twitter, and everybody thought that it was a framework that was being used at Twitter, even though it wasn't. And that somehow, if you used it too, you would be as successful the way that Twitter was successful. And it's just not how things add up. Like you don't have a business success because you chose the same set of tools as somebody else.
So a little unfortunate that those things have to be head to head. They're unrelated. I mean, I know they're related in people's minds, and that needs to be addressed, but one is a low level browser technology right. and one of is a CSS thing, framework that you slap on top of things.
And there are good reasons to use Bootstrap. I mean, I was listening to Shop Talk show, I don't know, now a couple months ago, and the two of you were sort of having a moment of, how come everyone's telling us not to use Bootstrap? I like Bootstrap. I don't know what's wrong with those people. They think they're so much better than us. They're not. I think there's a couple big reasons to use Bootstrap or another tool similar to Bootstrap, right? So one reason is the sort of the small budget problem of, you have a tiny budget and you got to build a whole website on that budget. Maybe it's just you and it's $3,000, or it's, right? You have, or it's a project you're doing yourself with your two friends and you want to get going quickly. And there are more important things to focus on than hand coding every line of your CSS. You want to have good typography right away. You want to have a good color palette right away. Maybe you're not a person who knows how to make those things from scratch. You want someone else to help you, right? There's a lot of ways to get there as a shortcut. One of them is grab a WordPress theme that you really like. One of them is use Twitter Bootstrap. Like there's, and I don't think that that's a shameful thing. I think that that actually can be a really good design decision to say, you know, we only have 400 hours to get this project launched. Let's really spend much of that time talking about content strategy and rewriting good content. Let's not worry so much about every detail of graphic design. Let's grab something that someone else has made and let's adapt it, let's modify it, but let's get going more quickly by not starting from scratch. I think at the opposite end of the spectrum is on huge projects with 50 developers, hundreds of developers, there's a tendency for projects like that to get very out of control and to end up with a lot of technical debt when everyone is allowed to write the code, whether it's the CSS, the HTML, or the JavaScript, and their own personal preferred way of writing code. And it's much better to have standards for your team to say, no, this is how we're going to write everything. This is how we're going to do everything. In fact, we're not going to design every little button separately. We're not going to design every input form separately. We're going to have a design system. We're going to get a handful of designers to come up with it. And then we're going to build a tool that kind of forces everybody to stay on that design system. And I think people sometimes reach for Bootstrap in order to be that design system for their team. I feel like if you have a big project like that with a big budget like that, I don't know, download Bootstrap and open it up and see how it was built. Also download some other style guides or some other frameworks that individual companies have built, like there's a bunch of them, right? There's if you go to styleguides.io, there's a whole collection of things that Anna Debenham has put together. Go look at how they were structured. Look at how they were organized. You can debate CSS methodology and figure out your favorite way to do it. And then build something for your team. And in it, put in a group of layouts. Make a set of layouts so that everybody isn't designing layout from scratch, that there's actually a set of, no, this is how we're doing it around here. I just don't think that that has to be a 12-column symmetrical grid. I don't think
I feel it like it almost should be a line in a design system. Yeah. Is use grid layout however you want to.
No, I actually think that it will be, you know, here are our, you know, here are all our like how we do headlines and buttons and stuff, and here's all of our like media objects, and here's how we add things together. This is what a teaser looks like. Here's three variations of a teaser. This is what sort of the top of the page looks like on a landing page. And then here are some layouts. I think a lot of the style side guides that we've seen people talk about and evangelize, it's funny because there's all this discussion of all the different levels on which you can design and define things. And then there's no discussion of layout. It's just sort of assumed that every one of those components is going to be dropped into a 12-column symmetrical layout. And I'm like, wait, why did you not also come up with some page templates? Why did you not also come up with some, you know, teaser layout patterns where the teaser block itself has some variation in layout? It isn't necessarily the same old layout that everybody's using of like photo, headline, paragraph. Like, you can come up with a different layout now. And in those situations, I would definitely use grid, but I would not say anyone can use grid in any way you want to. I would say here are the layouts. And oh, look, we put some classes on them, or we put some SAS mix-ins for them, or we've defined, right? So, but don't just download that framework from somebody else. Define it yourself for your team.
I'll chime in. I've like been kind of thinking about this week. Even I heard a talk on kind of pattern libraries and kind of this, like, why not just use Bootstrap? Because that's, I think that's a fair, we get that question kind of all the time. This woman, Anne Grundhofer from Project 202, spoke at this conference, and she kind of pointed out, like, you know, you can use these foundation bootstraps, but you may actually spend a lot of time reverse engineering what they did just to override and kind of, you know, like, it's in your brain, you're like, great, free thing, I'm just going to use that. But there are some, like, you may be paying some costs you don't see kind of up front, versus kind of rolling your own thing. That said, I think what one advantage of grid versus like some mega framework, I'm totally a fan of like just use what gets it out the door, sort of. But just with this kind of really cheap 3-line grid system that you can make, the cost of creating a complex grid system that you might not understand has gone down with CSS grid. It's like, it's 3 yeah. lines, and if you hate it, you just change one value. There's really only one value that I kind of tinker with, and so amazing.
Yeah.
Like CSS grid is kind of making grid systems almost disposable, like throwaway. Like, I can just chuck one out and delete it if it's bad. You know, here's my 3-column grid. Here, you know, like, this is it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it very easy to prototype stuff and to try, just to experiment with how things will look if you change how that grid is, what the sizing is. I think it makes the cost of experimenting so much lower, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's just for symmetrical grids. You get into asymmetrical grids, like, good luck with a framework. That's hard to do. So, but
I mean, I also think that a lot of people are super bored with how all the websites kind of look the same today. And I feel like that, more than anything, is going to compel people to slowly move away from using tools like Bootstrap, because it's gotten so extreme. Everyone's using the same typography, the same type of color palette, the same identical layouts. And it really doesn't, I think you're right. It's so easy at this point to make a much more creative layout by using CSS grid, or even coding the sort of the same results in a layout. I think it's easier to learn grid than it is to learn Bootstrap.
I think so. I think, you know, we've been defined, web design's been defined by our technology really since we started, you know, when we started doing sort of CSS layouts and everybody's website went to two columns, a skinny column with a navigation and a wide column with, that would stretch you with the rest of their site in, because that was all we could do. And everyone's site ended up looking the same, and it was defined by the technology. And I think that's what is carried on happening. You know, we've got slightly better technology, but it's still been hacks around the same bits of CSS. And we've just figured out how to do it better. But Bootstrap and that look that you see with the sort of framework-based sites is, again, it's design defined by the technology. And we've now actually got better technology. And that's the thing. And hopefully people are going to then be able to, you know, create what does the web design of this time look like? Because it doesn't need to be defined by old methods anymore. You know, we've got an awful lot more flexibility, which hopefully means people can do more interesting things.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Bootstrap and some of these others, because definitely anyone listening who's on a big project where Bootstrap is already part of the project, like, you can't just throw that out. You've got to stick with it. But maybe the new landing page that you're building, or the widget that goes into the sidebar, the layout of the content inside the widget, rather than using Bootstrap on that, you can use Grid on that. Or, you know, this new data visualization that you build to go halfway down this particular page, you could try out Grid layout with that instead of reaching for Bootstrap on that piece. There's someone at the CSS Layout Club New York who wrote a library that is like an undo grid layout framework library, where it's like a inside an add support statements. If a grid is being displayed, then basically it just makes all the layout for Bootstrap fall off so that she can then put it on particular pages at her job and then add grid back on top of things, which I think is interesting.
Wow. So we talked about a lot. And of course, you know, I think Jen said even at a moment that's easy. You could do a 5-day workshop on this kind of thing. There's a lot to talk about, stuff we didn't even get to. So maybe we'll have it again, but it's probably about time to wrap up.
Since we're going, thank you so much, y'all, for coming on the show. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? We'll start with Rachel.
So I am on Twitter at Rachel Andrew. So most things, You can find me there, and I tend to tweet when I sort of do things. All my grid stuff is at gridbyexample.com. So that's a whole bunch of, so there's a whole lot of videos there you can have a look at. My product is Perch at grabaperch.com, and everything else that I do is pretty much linked from rachelandrew.co.uk.
Well, and you have a newsletter if people want to subscribe.
Yes, I have CSS layout.
So many things.
Yeah, so much stuff. As I say, it is generally all linked from rachelandrew.co.uk and from Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll get all sorts of spam from my direction.
I consume all of those things.
I'm not just a podcaster. I'm also a customer. There you go. Well, thank you, Rachel, so much. And Jen, how can people follow you?
So people don't need to give me money, but they, so I have a website, jensimmons.com. People can find out where I'm speaking coming up. They can watch videos of my conference talk from last year and from the year before, and hopefully before too soon from this year as well. I have a labs page at labs.jensimmons.com, where I've put tons of experiments. I was going to say earlier, but didn't, that I feel like some of this figuring out what Grid can do and what it doesn't want to do, what it does want to do, is best figured out by simply opening up some sort of web browser and writing some CSS, some HTML, maybe using CodePen to do that, and just playing around. Some of the things I've discovered about Grid, I had no idea. I started writing code, and then I was looking at it going, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's actually how it works. It's so easy to code in some ways, and it's not easy to code, but in some ways, there's things about the code that's so easy that you end up kind of stumbling across some really cool ideas. So I encourage everybody to do that. And I'm also creating a project called Layout Land that you can go to layout.land and drop your email in there, and I'll send you an email when the project launches, where people can have a big experimental gallery together, where people can there'll be challenges each week or each month, and people can take up the challenge and see what other people did for that challenge, or that you can just post examples. Because I do think we're in a place where we need to just play around and see what happens and do it in a way that's kind of fun, the way that the web used to be, just sort of low stakes, and not like, oh, I got to ship this thing by next week. I need the way to do it. Because I don't think, I was actually on a call with Mark Bolton last week, and I caught both of us sort of saying to each other, don't do it that way. That's the wrong, don't ever use pixels. You should be using M's, or, you know, don't constrain this that way. Do it this other way. These habits we've had over the last 10 years are like, the correct way is this way. And I realized, gosh, we're both doing it. We're both trying to tell each other how to do things, and neither one of us has any idea. There is no proper way to do anything right now. So we need to throw out all the rules and start over and play around and see what happens. Twitter. Jen Simmons on Twitter is the other way to, that's how you follow. Just jamming all the.
Jen Simmons on Twitter, where valuable feedback and no fight ever happened. It's, love Twitter. All right. Thank you, Jen, so much. And I will actually side plug, download Firefox, try it out. Every time you see display grid, there's a little hash marky thing. Click that. Your life has changed.
Yes. I should say that too. I'm just going to say it again. When you start learning grid, it can be confusing because you're not sure whether the mistake that you've made is on the container or on the items. And it's so much more helpful if you could actually see the lines and you're like, I need to see the lines. If you use the Firefox DevTools, yes, we have this tool. You find the little, Eric Meyer was calling it the waffle icon, right?
Definitely a waffle. Hmm. It's totally a waffle.
It's a little waffle. Where it says display grid. So you click on the element that has display grid on it and you see the words display grid. A lot like, you know, there's like a color picker for a lot of tools where there's a color and you can click on the little patch of color and it brings up this little color picker. If you click on the little waffle next to, in between the words display and grid, this grid system, the lines will show up. And if you want, you can download Nightly and go into the settings and turn on this. There's a special setting that says display layout panel, and it adds an entire new panel to the inspector tools. And you could click on that panel, and then inside that panel, you get all kinds of options for turning on the grid numbers and extending the lines, changing the color of the lines. Eventually, you'll be able to see more than one grid at the same time, and you'll be able to like see the names and all sorts of other juicy, powerful tools are going to be in there. They're not done yet, which is why they're only in Nightly and why they're only behind a flag right now. But eventually, they'll be out from behind the flag, and then eventually, they'll be in the real version of Firefox.
Oh, hot tips. All right. Well, thank y'all for coming on the show. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star, heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. We really appreciate it. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. Get a brand new one. People want to hire people like you. And Chris, is there anything else you'd like to share?
Come see us all at eventapart.com and shoptalkshow.com. Bye.